That means it's time for a school update here on KCSI KOAK Radio. Tune in each weekday morning at 6:15 a.m. as we visit with schools from throughout the Country Sunshine listening area.
Back in the classroom, open your books.
And we are going to have the opportunity this morning to visit with the Griswold Community School District. And again, we do want to say thanks to Griswold Communications and Town and Country Sanitation for being a sponsor of our conversation. Mr. Dave Henrich with me this morning, superintendent of the Griswold and the Lenox Community School District. Mr. Henrich, good morning to you.
Good morning, Aaron.
How are you this morning?
Doing okay.
It's Thursday. We're well into school at this point, Mr. Henrich.
We are, yep. We're just about done with our second week already, so things are
rocking and rolling. That does not seem possible.
It goes quick, just like the summer did. I'm sure the school year will as well.
It seems to zip by. It's turned summer on us here.
It has, and one thing I've noticed, really, too, it seems to be not getting – the sun's not coming up quite so early. It stays dark a little later. So.
Yep. Crops are turning.
Yes, they are.
I mean, you can see fall, but it feels like summer.
And – one thing I guess I'm kind of thankful for is my yard mowing duties have slowed down a little bit, so I'm appreciative of that. I do really enjoy that, like the first couple of mowings in the spring, and then after that, it's like, okay, that's
enough. I've been waiting for my yard to go dormant all summer, and it just hasn't done that.
Agreed.
So, anyway. So, Mr. Henrich, if we had to say 2 weeks in, now we're early on in the school year, good start to the school year?
Yep. We started on August 24th, and then our preschoolers joined us a couple of days later on the 26th. My opinion, and I think it's pretty much true of everyone else, both the students and staff have settled in nicely and getting into our routines. And part of that is due to not only our veteran staff members that have returned, but also our new staff members that have been added for the 26-27 school year. And I'd like to take a moment to recognize those new staff members that will be a vital part to our school system as a whole.
Yeah.
And those are Ryan Asklin, athletic director, Megan Bates, custodian, Alicia Baxter, school nurse, and she will actually begin September 8th, which is next Tuesday. Savannah Belt, preschool teacher. Holly Brown, elementary special ed teacher. Michelle Cockburn, fifth grade teacher. Megan Harding, librarian. Jill Miller, middle school special education teacher. Bindi Page, high school English teacher. Vance Peterson, high school science teacher. Ashley Staniak, ag teacher, as well as FFA advisor. And McKenna Wichman will be our middle school basketball coach. And as I mentioned just a few minutes ago, we are very fortunate to have such a great group of people joining us. And they're certainly professional individuals. And along with that, I shared about our new nurse. Like to throw a special thanks to Jerry Orsted and Ann Jones. Since our new nurse cannot start till September 8th, Jerry and Ann have been filling in as substitute nurses during the first couple weeks. So greatly appreciate their willingness and ability to do that. Jerry and Ann were our previous two nurses to the district. So certainly appreciate their efforts to make sure our health needs of our students as well as our staff have been taken care of during those first 2 weeks.
You bet. Are there open positions, Mr. Henrich, we need to talk about?
Yep. Although our immediate staffing needs are taken care of, we always have a few positions that we need down the road. Those would include a quiz bowl sponsor, a dance team coach, a accompaniment middle school girls track coach, head and assistant golf coach, assistant cross country coach, which we could utilize now, middle school boys basketball coach, and finally a co-National Honor Society sponsor.
Mr. Henrich, so do they reach out to the school through your website? Do they go to Teach Iowa? Used to, it had to all go through there, right? But not anymore.
There's a lot of different ways. So legally, we have to post all of our openings on Teach Iowa. A lot of times, too, we will also post them on our website, post them on Facebook. If anybody ever has questions, they can always just call one of the administrators. As far as application, again, they can use Teach Iowa. There's links there to apply, or again, call the school, get an application. So there's a lot of different ways that people can do that, and we'll accept an application. Even if we don't have an opening, to keep it on file And so the best thing I can tell people, if they are interested in serving our district, give us a call and put an application, and we'll hang on to it till we have something available that
there
will meet their needs.
You betcha. Mr. Henrich, we're not there yet. Legislative session will be here soon. It seems like the last few years it's just been a whole lot of legislation directed at schools. We'll go that way.
Yeah.
So let's start there. What's going on?
Yeah.
Where do we need to start?
So this is, I got to do the math real quick. This is my 35th year in education. My first six were in Wisconsin as a teacher, then 8 years as a principal in Iowa, now my 21st as a superintendent. And as my roles have changed, obviously I've paid more attention to legislative things.
Yeah.
But in my opinion, every year it seems to be more and more educational bills get passed. And with that being said, again, my opinion, I think last year there were more bills passed that deal with education than I've ever seen before. And because of that, Aaron, if we wanted to, you and I could probably spend all day talking about those those bills and laws, but I don't want to bore you or the listeners, and we probably don't have time. So what I thought I would do is spend some time today just highlighting the ones that I think the listeners may have the most interest in, or if they're parents, that may impact them as we move forward. So the first one is House File. And again, these have all been put into law. So when I House File, they're really laws now. But start out as House File 2676. And that really deals with screen time, and it impacts students in grades K through 5. And what it does, it limits the amount of screen time students can have. Districts had a little bit of flexibility of how much time they could set. And actually, the maximum amount of time by law that you could set was 60 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we chose to do in our policy. And the reason for that was is just to give us the flexibility. That doesn't mean our kids are going to actually spend 60 minutes per day
right
in front of a screen. It just gives us that flexibility in case we want to do that.
Yeah.
So along with that, we have to be aware of, you know, what counts as screen time and what does not. So digital instruction means the use of any instructional technology to deliver lessons, assignments, assessments, and instructional activity. So basically what it means is if a teacher is using it to show a student or a class how to do something, that doesn't count. But once the teacher relinquishes power, so to speak, from her lesson to the kids for them to practice or do assignments on their own, now that does count.
Okay.
So when kids are doing their own thing, that counts. Some, again, things that do not count, if a student is on an IEP and their IEP states that they will use these devices because of their disability, that doesn't count. If they need it for assistive technology, or they're taking a state assessment, or they're in a computer class where they're learning programming, you know, those types of things do not count.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, the clock is going in 60 minutes for the day.
Yeah.
So
that's in force now.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So one of the things I always think, Mr. Henrich, when I hear this, is this good for students? And what's it going to cost the district?
Yeah.
Because every time you make an adjustment, it's going to there's some number associated with that's going to cost.
So, and I will answer your question here, but what I think is funny is how the laws kind of go from, and I won't just say laws, practices as well, go from one extreme to another in education, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a few years ago, the big push was one-to-one computers, right?
Yep.
Everybody's got to have them.
Yep.
And now we're limited to how much time we can use them. So and
hopefully we're learning and getting better with that. But
And probably the best practice is in the middle, right?
Yeah.
I don't disagree that there's a lot to be said for students learning to do things on their own, paper, pencil. I don't disagree with that. At the same time, one of our jobs in education is prepare kids for the future. And whether we like it or not, or agree with it or not, there are not too many jobs out there that don't use technology of some type.
Yeah.
So our kids got to be able to use and understand how to do that. Mm-hmm. So I think this is good. at some level, yeah. right? It's, again, happy medium.
Right, right.
And again, that's where I get frustrated with the bills and laws and practices. Again, I'm not blaming it all on the laws, because sometimes we do this to ourselves. Too many extremes, right? Happy mm-hmm. medium is where we need to land, I think.
Let's talk about a civics exam. That's new this year as well.
Yep. So this law was actually passed last year, but it goes into effect this year. And what it says is that the DE, or Department of Education, has developed a multiple choice test that is based upon the U.S. citizenship test, and all students must pass this test, and passing is considered a 60% rate, and it is now required for graduation. Students can start taking this test at any point in ninth grade, and that's up to the each school district, whether they want to start giving it to ninth graders or they want to wait till they're a senior. It's a local decision, but students can take this as many times as necessary in order to get that 60% level. But again, it is a required graduation requirement, and they must pass it to graduate.
I guess I didn't realize that it started your freshman year. You could take it.
You can. So, yeah. Okay. And again, that's
a district decision.
Some schools may have every kid 9 through 12 take it this year, and other ones may wait till they're in government class or whatever.
Right.
And both of my schools had kids just try last year, and our students are going to be pretty successful with it.
Okay.
So
good deal.
Yep.
So that'll be new this year.
That's
another one that we've heard a lot about. These are the highlights.
Yeah.
Mr. Hendricks,
yeah.
The student behavior
yep.
is one that we've heard a lot about.
This one, just be honest, this one is Senate File 2428. I probably have not seen a bill or law that's come out recently that's created the most confusion or lack of understanding on a statewide basis. And when I say that, I'm talking from the Department of Education, educational leaders. It's just really, really been confusing. There's been multiple meetings, guidance put out. Actually, I went to an AEA superintendent's meeting yesterday, and there was still a lot of confusion and guidance and changes being made even yesterday, right?
Wow.
And this was supposed to be implemented July 1st.
Yeah.
So it's kind of ever evolving. So these are the highlights. And part of the confusion was when the law came out, then the typical process is the school board association will share a policy based upon the law, and then there's some additional guidance. But what was shared with us was the policy is the law, and there is no deviation from that. Now, as people are sorting through that, when I say people, legal people, they're stating that it's not as prescriptive as what was once thought. So that's actually a good thing. So anyway, what it deals with is when there's a disruption in the classroom, and I'm not going to share every detail because, again, we could speak all day, but there's really two types of disruptions that we're talking about, a violent and nonviolent disruption, and that's the part that I'm not going to get into mm-hmm. the detail. But students are put into two different categories in terms of grades, so it's K-5 and 6 through 12. So when a kindergarten to fifth grade student is removed for a disruption, they are placed under the supervision of the principal for at least 30 minutes, and they're not allowed to go back to that classroom until the principal and the teacher has a discussion. When it's a student in grades 6 through 12, starts out as the same scenario, which means they're put in the principal's supervision for at least 30 minutes, can't go back until the principal and that teacher's had a discussion. But the difference of this age group of kids is they cannot go back to that teacher's classroom until the next school day.
Okay.
So, but here's the difference is for a lot of these kids, especially like 7 through 12, they may not have that teacher till the next day anyway, if you think about periods, right?
Yeah.
Like if
the way the schedule is.
Yes, like if you're my teacher and I have you first period and you remove me, I may not have you again the rest of the day. So I can go to my second period class. I don't have to sit in the office the rest of the day because I don't have you again till tomorrow. So
okay.
And then, of course, if the removal involves students with an IEP or special education, then that triggers a special meeting or IEP meeting, and that meeting must include any teacher, every teacher who instructs that student. So the art teacher, the PE teacher, the music teacher.
Even though the issue may have been with the art teacher.
Yes.
Every teacher has to do that.
Every teacher. Yep.
Oh, wow.
Yep. And obviously, there's going to be circumstances where not every teacher
Only with the IEP, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep. So obviously, there's always circumstances where every teacher can't attend. Maybe the teacher's ill. Maybe they're a coach and they got another obligation after school. So if they can't attend, then they have to sign a summary of the meeting to make sure they're aware of what was discussed in the meeting and what plans were put in place after that. One of the big things about this bill was, in my opinion, at some point at some school, a teacher or teachers were not supported by their administration. I'm sure that's why this bill was put in place. And so if a teacher feels like the administrator did not support them in the removal of a student, then they can appeal how this was handled to the school board. That's in the law.
Okay.
Which, honestly, that was there before anyway. So,
I mean, hasn't that always been the case?
Yes.
Okay. Yep.
But again, as I mentioned, districts are continuing to learn about this. And as I mentioned, yesterday at the AEA meeting, some things were shared that are going to help us implement some things as terms of flexibility. So the keys that were shared yesterday is definitions, and at the end of the day, the teacher has the power. So what I mean by that is this. So a lot of this gets triggered when a student is removed. So as a district, we get to define what removal is. So an example, if a teacher asks a student to step out in the hallway for a quick conversation, we get to decide, is that considered removal or not? Right? Because if it's just a quick conversation, a timeout per se, and we decide that's not considered removal, then this doesn't come into play.
Okay.
So, but we need to define that now to decide whether this is enacted or not. Another example would be if we have an agreement with a student that, hey, if you feel like you know you're going to blow up and lose it, and you on your own decide to step out, is that considered removal? Again, we need to decide that in advance, and that'll determine whether this is enacted or not. And as I mentioned, the intent of the law is to give teachers the power and give them control of their classroom back. So another thing that we learned yesterday, that it can be written into the policy that if a teacher removes a student from the classroom for disruptive behavior, they have the right to state, even though they remove the student, that they can say, I don't want this state law or the behavioral policy to be enacted. They can say, yep, I removed the student, but I don't want this policy to be applied.
The teacher can do that?
Yes.
Okay.
But not the principal, but the teacher can.
Okay. Because,
again, the intent of this is give the power back to the teachers. So the teachers have that control or power. Also, if a student was disrupted in the classroom, the teacher has the right or the authority not to remove the student from the classroom if they feel like they can handle it by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And
you know, I don't disagree with some of that, Mr. Henrich.
No, I don't either. Yep.
I like it. I like the teacher, and I don't disagree with the intent.
Yep.
Because I think teachers should be able to kick a kid out.
Yep.
I 100% agree with that. But it does get a little murky with some of that stuff.
It does. And as we were talking before we went on the air, when this first was presented to us late in July, everything was presented very prescriptive. It's like, here you go.
Yeah.
You have no choice. It's like, oh my goodness. Now, as things have kind of sifted out, it makes it a little more easier to manage.
Yeah.
I just wish this could be sifted out in a more timely fashion.
than 2 weeks into the school year?
Yeah, because when we get this, it's literally towards the end of July.
Yeah, absolutely.
And teachers are coming back in 2 weeks, and we got to figure all this out. And again, this one, at the state level, it was confusion across the board.
Right.
I'm usually confused because I'm not very smart, right? But I'm telling you, everyone across the board, it was a mess.
I like the intent, because I do think teachers need to be able to say,
absolutely,
all right, little Johnny, you're interrupting everyone else's education. You got to get out for a little bit. 100% agree with that.
So both of my schools, for this one, we've done the first reading of the policy, but we've not done the second reading because we knew there were changes coming.
Yeah.
And so the law is the law, technically, no matter whether we have a policy or not. And what I didn't want to do was have the board approve the second reading to adopt the policy, and then the next month come back and amend the policy.
Right.
So I'm hoping today or tomorrow maybe that I can do a Zoom meeting with my four principals, both at Lennox and Griswold, and they don't have to be the same, but agree on some policy things, and then in September.
Some of it doesn't seem very practical to me, to be honest with you. The fact that you have to meet with every single teacher, that doesn't seem practical to me.
And honestly, the principals also have been watching a lot of webinars and meetings that I haven't seen or heard all them to. So they may have some other information that I don't have all the updates on, because there's been so much.
And I suppose in today's world, everything has to be codified, there has to be a policy. And
we've been trying to kind of divide and conquer about, because there's been new information almost on a weekly basis. So,
okay.
So, yep.
Anything else with that, Mr.
No,
Hammers?
I think that's enough.
That is enforced, but there's still work being done on the actual letter of the law and the policy with
that.
Yes, sir.
Another
one is eighth graders playing high school sports.
This has
garnered a lot of attention.
Yep. So this one started out as House File 2591, and as you mentioned, it gives the eighth graders the ability to play high school sports. And again, this is comes down to a local decision. And schools are not required to enact this or allow eighth graders to do that. But here's what we've done at Griswold. So we're going to start at the coach level. So the head coach has the opportunity, when I say head coach, head varsity coach, has the opportunity to identify a eighth grader that has the potential to play at the high school level. So they identify a student by filling out a form, so to speak, and that form asks for reasons behind that, which include things such as their talent level, number of kids on the high school level in that sport, the junior high level, what impact it would have on both the high school level, junior high level, how they feel that student is ready in terms of emotional and physical and those types of things. So once the coach completes that recommendation form, then it goes to the administration, which would be the athletic director and the high school principal. They evaluate that request really based upon those same things to make sure it's not only in the best interest of that student athlete, but also the overall programming, to make sure we're not going to hurt. This, for example, if the head coach would say, I want to take all the eighth graders and move them up, and that leaves us nothing at the middle school level, that would not be in the best interest of all of our programming. So the athletic director and high school principal examines that. If they give it the thumbs up or okay, then the next step goes to the parent of that athlete. They're explained to them the request, share the pros and cons, guidelines, the rules that go along with that.
Mm-hmm.
And if the parent gives the okay, then they're allowed to participate. So some things with that that are true of all schools if they do this is once a student is moved up, they're not allowed to go back for that sport, right? So I'll say a girl in volleyball, so they have to, if they get moved up, they have to do that at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
And they can't start at eighth grade and middle of the year move up. And one, if they start at the beginning of the year as a high school volleyball player, they can't move down at the middle of the season if things aren't going well.
Okay. Yeah.
But it's sport by sport. So, again, an eighth grader could play high school volleyball, but then play middle school basketball.
And this is district by district as well. Each district kind of implements their own policy, correct?
Yep. Yeah. Some schools are not doing it at all. Some schools have chose to only do it for sports where they don't have high school sports, like maybe, don't have junior high sports, like maybe golf.
Mm-hmm.
And so Everybody has their own rules and thoughts. So we're allowing the opportunity for every sport. Quite frankly, we don't anticipate using it very often.
Right. So. Okay. So that is in force now as well, right?
That's correct.
All right. A lot of discussion there. The idea and the thought behind that is to help increase participation in some of this. I mean, come from Des Moines. That's what that's what the narrative was.
Yep.
All right.
In our opinion, is that's the intent. It's a Band-Aid to the problem.
Yeah.
It's not really going to, and again, that's not, when I say that, it's not I'm not saying it from a Griswold standpoint. I'm saying it from a statewide standpoint.
Broader perspective, we have fewer students.
Yep.
And we have fewer students participating.
Agreed.
It's just a trend.
For us personally, if we were to make a change about eligibility, my preference would be to allow sixth graders to come up to play middle school sports.
There you go.
If it was up to me, that's what I would like to do.
We call it the Henrich Law.
Yeah.
All right. Dave Henrich with me, too, by the way, from the Griswold and the Lenox Community School District. Fall sports are underway.
Yes, they are.
Let's talk about some that are going on.
Yep. So some high school numbers and kind of where we are so far. So on the high school volleyball level, we have 21 participants this year. Our coaches continue to be Jody Roselle and Marlia Mundorf. And our current record so far is 2-3. And high school football side of things, we have 24 participants, coaches Seth Limpke, Kevin Farr, and Cole Cooper. And we played week 0, so we have an extra game under our belts compared to some schools, and we're 1-1. Mm-hmm. And cross country, although we don't have any high school runners this year, we do have 2 junior high boys, and our coach is Pluma Pross. So we're looking for good things out of our junior high crew there.
Okay.
And then as far as some upcoming events, not a whole lot has happened yet, but it's going to be happening real soon here, as we talked about. On the elementary side of things, we have already started FAST testing, which is just a way to gain a baseline of our achievement level of some of our students. We do FAST testing 3 times per year. After the screening is done, our staff works very hard at the individual level and set up plans for each student based upon their abilities and their needs. And interventions are, again, set up for those students, individual learning activities. We do progress monitoring. And again, then when we do the second screening, obviously we look back to see how they did the first one. Hopefully we see a lot of progress and we start the process over again, making new goals and plans, and we keep going. And obviously the goal is to improve student achievement every day. So that is already happening this week at the elementary level.
Yeah. Wow.
Off and running.
Yeah.
Yep. Then some athletic activities. September 3rd, which is today, junior high volleyball at Fremont Mills, 4:00, followed by high school at Fremont Mills at 5:30. Tomorrow, the football boys play at Audubon at 7:00. Saturday, high school volleyball back in action, tournament at Missouri Valley that begins at 9:00. And then just a reminder, on Monday, no school due to Labor Day.
Here we are. I can't believe that we're already has some testing going on, Mr. Hendricks.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah.
All right. Dave Hendricks with me, superintendent of the Griswold and the Lenox Community School District. Mr. Hendricks, what else do we need to touch on here that we haven't touched on yet this morning?
So one thing we always say is, you know, we have a lot of stuff going on, and kids are very busy, and there's a lot of opportunities. Kids would greatly support or appreciate your support, whether it's FFA or band or football or whatever the case may be. So a lot of opportunities to come out and show support. Something I should throw a shout out to Ryan Asklin as well as our community. So Ryan last week or this week, I lose track, but put a thing very quickly out on Facebook saying, would anybody willing to donate a little bit of money to buy vouchers, if that's the right term, to give students who come to home events a $5 ticket for the concession stand to encourage them to come to events. Within a manner of a day, he had, I don't want to speak incorrectly, but like $1,000 worth of donations.
Wow.
So when kids walked in the door that night at the volleyball game, he just started handing out kids $5 coupons. So that's a testament to him to try to incite participation, our community to donate. So is this awesome that people are supportive of our school and our kids, and Ryan for thinking of that. So again, we just want people to come together and be a community and support our kids. And obviously they're doing that.
Very good. Absolutely. All right, Mr. Hendricks, nice to see you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you for stopping by. Pleasure to visit with you. Dave Hendricks with me this morning, superintendent of the Griswold and the Lenox Community School District. And again, we do want to say thanks to Griswold Communications and Town and Country Sanitation for being a sponsor of our conversation.
September is Suicide Prevention Month. As your local community